Hey, beautiful people, you're listening to The Hue Report, a show that celebrates Black beauty 24/7, 365. I'm your host, Olivia Hancock, and during each episode, I chat with incredible Black beauty entrepreneurs, editors, and executives about their career journeys, unique experiences with beauty, and the products that work for them.
Perfect. All right. Hi, Shanice. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. I'm excited to chat with you today.
Me too. This has been a long time coming. It's been a while. We met initially last summer and very briefly, but I don't think I realized at the time who you were and that you were the person behind Epilogic.
Yeah, it was fun. We were at Darian's event and I remember we were sort of like chatting horoscopes for like a minute or two. And then it was nice when we had a chance to read. Talk about doing a podcast. So thank you.
Of course. So I would love to start from the beginning. And I think it would be great for you to sort of like introduce yourself and talk about what you do now before we sort of go back and explore your history and whether you ever even wanted to be in beauty and all of those things. So starting now, like what are you up to these days? A lot, I know. But
yeah, so I'm Dr. Shanice Jenitin to formally introduce myself. I am an oculofacial plastic surgeon in terms of my like medical training and specialization. A lot of people have never even heard that term before, including other physicians. It basically just means like a super specialist of the eyes and face, right? Like just a lot of syllables to put together a very like simple concept. In addition to my medical practice, I'm the founder of Epilogic Skincare, which I like to sort of summarize as clinical skincare evolved, right? It sort of like humanizes, warms, elevates the clinical skincare world.
Love. And we're going to get into all of that, but I'd like to start by asking about how you started working in the beauty world to begin with. So you have this sort of hyper specific specialty. How did you land there?
Yeah, so my road to beauty certainly isn't linear. To become an oculofacial plastic surgeon, the route for me was a specialization in ophthalmology, which is like the surgical subspecialty of the eyes, which means we're like, you know, trained to do all sorts of procedures inside the eye, outside the eye. It's really more medical in terms of its focus on vision, right? But as I sailed through my training, I realized I was far more in love with the outside of the eye than the inside of the eye, sort of like where form and function come together. And so that's what led me to subspecialize in plastic surgery around the eyes. And even within oculofacial plastic surgery, it became really apparent to my mentors that I had a love for all things aesthetics. And they were just like, listen, like the things that you're asking of us, like we don't even like spend that much time on. So I actually, as an outshoot of my fellowship, I like shadowed dermatologists in their practices and watched their approach. So really sort of like the calling to beauty was not a very like linear one, but still a very natural one, if that makes sense. Like it was like really about sort of like honing my skills to get to use the techniques that I was taught, but for the actual like processes and conditions that like I was passionate about treating.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So did you start out looking at working in ophthalmology as like more the medical path? Were you trying to go down the medical path and sort of the aesthetics drew you in? Would you say that's how it happened?
I would say that aesthetics drew me in and sort of like I was like fed and more passionate about aesthetics, right? Like as I opened my practice, when I started, I did everything. Like if you had a fracture to your orbit that needed repair, I would take care of you. If you had a skin cancer that needed to be excised and reconstructed, I took care of you. If you just had like a little eyelid bag that you wanted zhuzhed and, you know, smoothed down, I could take care of you. But as time went on, those aesthetic patients really were sort of like clamoring to my practice. And I was like developing like a bigger joy in taking care of them. So it was sort of like a bi-directional street. It was two way in terms of like how that process refined itself.
Right. I love that. It feels like a really organic path. paths, even, and most organic paths aren't linear, but you end up in the right place either way. What did the journey to creating your own practice look like? I know that's like, that's a huge deal, right? Like, you're a Black woman, you're a surgeon, you are creating your own practice in Brooklyn, by the way. What was that like?
Yeah, I'd have to say that, you know, sort of like what we hit on in terms of like the organicness of coming to an aesthetic subspecialty also was the same with my practice. You know, when before I had my own practice and I had other gigs, right, in other hospitals, in other like other practices, I would find that I would love my interaction with the patients, but there were other pain points in terms of just like showing up and doing the work there, right? Like I didn't like someone else dictating how much time I could spend with my patients. I didn't like someone else dictating like how my appointments were set up and like how I like had the luxury of really sort of like sitting down and cultivating relationships. It just didn't work for me. And I also like didn't like, I know this is going to sound like a jerk, like I wasn't in control of the staff, right? Like when you show up and you're a consultant somewhere, like that staff is just there. And like, sometimes I was just like, my patients deserve to be treated better than this. I deserve to be treated better than this, but I can't, I'm not your boss. So I'm not allowed to say something. I think the final straw was, I'm not going to name what practice this was at, but I was at one office and I needed to go into a supply closet to get something to take care of my patient and do a little in-office procedure. And I opened the cabinet and all the stuff fell on my head. I was like,
no.
Like, I'm so neurotic and so like, you know, like OCD, and I want things like piled and arranged in a certain way. And this cabinet was so messy. I was like, this is not how medicine should be practiced. This is insane. So that was like, that was kind of the final straw.
Yeah,
I was
just like, I cannot work under these conditions.
Totally. So, you know, the path to opening up your own office is tough, right? Like, you're a small fry. No one knows who you are. No one knows why they should have to come see you. So I remember like when I started my practice, I was only there one day a week and I was still working at other practices, right? And you have to just sort of like put your nose down. Like, you know, you're working overtime just because like you still need to like eat and pay your bills, but you're trying to like grow your baby, your little passion project. So it was an interesting path, but I don't regret a second of it.
Yeah, I love that. And when you started the practice, I know that now you have, there's you, you're doing your oculofacial surgeries, but then there's also an aesthetics portion. Did you start out just with you by yourself? And how did that sort of expand, the aesthetic side of the business expand?
Yeah. So, you know, when I first started out, it was just me doing all services, providing all care to my patients. And like I said, it was broad, right? It was medical. It was, you know, in office. It was OR surgical. It was, you know, in office aesthetics. And, you know, as time went on, I found that the cosmetic side really flourished and sort of there was less time on the schedule for patients with like orbital fractures and that sort of thing, right? And then as the aesthetic side of the practice grew, like patients with these demands came up, it was clear that there was like another arm that was missing. And so Samantha Mims is like the beloved skin therapist of our practice of Brooklyn Face and Eye. She came on and she's like sort of like my right hand, you know, like I'm doing services of a certain tier. And, you know, there's another tier, like when you need facials, peels, microneedling, some laser procedures, Sam and I work in tandem to provide like a really holistic approach to caring for our patients.
Yeah, absolutely. I've heard her work is incredible. People rave about her facials. So I cannot wait to one day go and get one. I like the journey of sort of starting your own business is really fascinating to me, especially starting your own practice. And I just am really interested in that sort of like entrepreneurial journey and like any specific learning moments that you had along the way or specific mistakes you made that you learned from as you were building up what is now Brooklyn Face and Eye.
All of them. I made all of the mistakes. I like, it's kind of ironic to me that I have two businesses because I'm an accidental entrepreneur, right? Like my goal in setting up the practice was not like, I am going to start a successful business. It was just like, I cannot work at places where supplies are falling on my head. It was sort of out of like self-preservation and salvation that I started it. So I've made every mistake, right? Like, and also like, this is sort of a tangent, but I do think to some extent, practicing medicine is at odds with running a business. If you think about it, sort of like the ethos of both of those things are like, you know, the first thing in practice medicine is just like hold the patient's hand. It doesn't matter how long it takes. It doesn't matter like, you know, like there's no time is money in those situations, right? Like, whereas like when you're an entrepreneur, when you're running a business, you do have to kind of like look at that P&L. Like, did we see enough people? Did we do enough procedures, right? So it's really kind of tough to sort of like resolve those quests. And that's why I pay attention to none of it. I'm the worst person to ask about business. I always kid, like a patient will come in and they're like, oh my gosh, thank you for making time for me today. I had all this back. And I was like, I know nothing about it. I sit here in this room and people just come to me. Do you know what I mean? I just feel like my job is to focus on what I do best. And that's like the in-person, the day-to-day with my patients. That's like making sure that they're happy. And I've got to be honest with you, I have great people that handle everything else.
Incredible. Yeah. I mean, I think that's part of
the challenge.
So maybe
that's the learning, right?
Yeah, that is it.
Figure out what you're great at, hone in on it, and then delegate everything else. Easier said than done when you're just starting. At the beginning, I was doing everything, like absolutely everything. It was just like, oh my God, those were like the hardest days, right? But as you sort of like gain a little bit more traction, you start to grow, like get things off of your plate quickly that you're not shining at. Because in honesty, like the second you do that, that's when things flourish. That's when things grow.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It requires investment, I imagine. And I think it can be difficult, especially if it's your baby, to hand off parts of it to anybody else. But like you said, like if the part that's sustaining you and feeding you is the thing that you get to focus most of your time on, you're golden.
I think a lot of people disagree with me, like sort of like well-seasoned entrepreneurs, but I actually think there is such value in like being in the dirt, like in the weeds of your practice, in your business at the beginning. Like even if you have investment, like I know we're about to sort of like transition to Epilogic. When Epilogic just started, like I was the one packing those boxes. I was walking the boxes over to UPS myself. When there was a little thank you card that came in the box with Epilogic, it was my hands and my signature, like, thank you for supporting us, right? And I don't regret that at all, right? Like, I think there's something of value to like see it from the ground up, like from that first order, and then you get your 10th and your 100th. Like, I think there's like, yes, by all means, there's no point in me packing boxes now, but I think there's great value in like seeing who's ordering from you in the beginning. Like there's this great value, you cherish what you're building so much more. I think if your hands are doing like even the smallest tasks from the beginning and sort of like seeing it grow.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And I think that's true of almost any like work of like when you get in there and you actually just do the work and you see things through from beginning to end, there's a totally different level of satisfaction that you like personally derive from getting it done.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so you mentioned Epilogic. We have to discuss because I see it everywhere. I see the dots everywhere. How did Epilogic come to be?
So the same way that I said sort of like my path to being a cosmetically focused oculofacial plastic surgeon, Epilogic came as an extension of that. You know, whenever I'm talking to my patients, I'm doing their consults. It doesn't matter what you're coming to see me for, right? You're coming to get surgery on like a droopy upper lid, or you're coming to get Botox. It's just like, what do? How do you take care of your face? And people would always ask me for recommendations. And I love and adore clinical skincare, right? I think it's just like, you know, that's sort of like a natural sort of like facet of my clinical training. Like I appreciate evidence, data, research. And so like I stand, you know, clinical skincare lines, because I think that's really important. And when I would make recommendations of clinical skincare products, you could feel sort of like the needle scratch in the conversation. Like people's eyes went dead. They sort of like glazed over. They were absolutely disinterested, right? And then I was thinking to myself, like, what's going on here? Like, why is there this disconnect? And I started paying attention to the answers I was getting, right? And the first thing that came up all the time was, Doc, do you know how hard it was to find you? Like, I'm a woman of color and I did my research and I found you, a woman of color, to take care of me. And now you're writing down all these products that don't take that like intent to heart at all, right? And she was like, none of these products were made with me in mind. Like, she was just like, I don't feel like seen by the things that you're trying to offer me. And I was like, good point. Interesting. And then even if they were sort of like interested in the ingredient story, they were just like, why does this feel so like cold, medicinal? Why does this feel so sterile? Like, I don't actually want to purchase this, right? Like, there was, you realize that like, it's not a prescription, right? Like, you're not going to the pharmacy. It's your beauty routine, right? If you come to my office, like, I try so hard to make sure that like you love it there. Like, not only are you going to love the results, I hope that I do, of your treatment, but I want you to love the experience of getting it done. And why am I making a recommendation of what you should use at home that doesn't honor that relationship also, like that sort of like experience of beauty, right? So then I was just like, okay, I think there's something that needs to be done here. And quite honestly, I created Epilogic for my practice. I was just like, these are the products that I would like to be able to recommend at the end of my consults. And this is how I want these products formulated. And this is how I want them presented. So that's really how Epilogic came to be.
I love it. And I really particularly like that story because I'm a market researcher by trade, I guess. That's my day job. I do focus groups and all that good stuff and surveys. So hearing a scenario where you are getting live feedback from the consumer, from the person who is benefiting from the product, like, I love that. Like, actually just listening to what people want and providing it. I think there's a lot in the beauty industry of guessing at what people want, guessing at what people need. And so starting Epilogic in this sort of like hyper specific scenario of like, I want to be able to recommend this to my patients is almost the best case scenario in my opinion, because you ran a focus group pretty much, right? Like, you got these individuals' interests, their lifestyles, and had this more holistic vision of what could help them in mind. And I think that's what separates a really intentional, thoughtful product from just the mass consumption that we have today.
And that was part of it too, right? There was also this element of confusion and frustration. There's like, I'm inundated with choices and like, I appreciate that you're making recommendations for me, but like, WTF, like, right. A lot of my patients just felt sort of like overwhelmed with saturation, right? They were just like, we don't know what to listen to anymore. So I just wanted to be really like clear and intentional, as you said. It's just like, this is why this is important. And, you know, even though I have like a breadth of patients in my practice, I will say like, it's primarily women of color, right? That's who I'm serving. And it allowed me to really pay attention to what they wanted, what they were frustrated by, what their concerns are. And so like, I created Epilogic with all those things in mind, right? Like, when I'm doing a product, I'm like, oh, she's going to love this. I can't wait to present this to her. Like, you know, having someone's face in mind when you're like creating a product is like, it really at least helped me, you know, get things to life.
Absolutely. Were there any things, like, how did the journey of creating your practice first help or hurt you as you created Epilogic?
It only helps. It only helps. Because like you said, it's kind of like every day I go to work, I have like a focus group of 12 to 15 people to rely on every single time, right? So like, you know, Epilogic originally launched in 2019. I relaunched, you know, late last year. And even that process of revising and refining and sort of like doubling down and getting even more specific and intentional was totally informed by the process of continuing to have these conversations. It's not like, oh, I'm done. I've amassed the data. Goodbye. It's an evolving conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk about revision because this has been like, you and I have chatted about revision and the bravery that it takes to undergo revision. So what was behind your thought process in sort of pulling back Epilogic and then relaunching last year?
Yeah. So, you know, Epilogic was created for my practice. And then lo and behold, I launch and like the world is paying attention. I was just like, wait, what? Huh? Like I literally created it just for like, you know, within the walls of my office. We got a lot of love from press. We won a couple of awards. I was getting interest from like department stores that I never thought I would ever be on their radar. And I was realized like, you know, the void that exists in my office exists in the world, right? Like I'm touching on something. And like, I can tell you that like in general as a person, like, I'm shy, I'm timid. And I was just like, if I'm going to do this, I really think like it's time to take up space, right? Like it's time to like go big, like fully lean in to the ethos that I'm trying to like nurture here. So the thought process was I still stand behind the intention of every single product, but I also learned a lot about like ingredient technology and formulation technology. And I was like, I don't want to be complacent with that information just because I already launched. So each of the 8 products in the line relaunched with slight tweaks to the formulas to make sure that they were as good as I could possibly make them. And also like exist in a way that A, can compete in the retail landscape, make sure that like, you know, when we're next to the other like big boys in clinical skincare, you're paying attention to Epilogic too, even though they're big and I'm small, like I can still take up space, even if it's just visually for a second. And also like, I just think there's something to be said about breaking down sort of stereotypes of what things are. And I think my practice has come to sort of like embody that in a way, like what does a Black oculofacial plastic surgery office look and feel like? Like, what does clinical skincare today look and feel like, right? Like, so I just really wanted to be bolder, more intentional, and not my usual timid, shy, stand in the corner self about bringing Epilogic to the world. Like, I was just like, let's actually like take some risks here and like put it all forward.
Right. I love that. Was there any hesitation for you as far as sort of very publicly going under this revision? I don't know. I think sometimes I can have a fear of like, if I put something out in the world, it has to be exactly as I said it would be. And I don't want to sort of publicly correct mistakes, quote unquote. Like, not that Epilogic was a mistake by any means or measure, but I think there's sort of like a resistance in our society to changing our minds. And so was there any sort of personal sort of hesitation to revising the line?
I'm full of self-doubt as a human. Like I'm flawed in that way. Like I'm always like, did you do that right? Like, could you have done better? So I do think that I was nervous about putting the revision out into the world because, you know, we did garner love, right? I was just like, I remember like waking up in the middle of the night, several nights, like the insomnia was pretty gnarly, you know, just like, what if everyone hates it? What if like everyone just liked what I did 1.0 and like, they're just like, why did you F this up? Do you know, I was just like, what if I, but there came a point, and I think this also has to do with being like an ophthalmic plastic surgeon. I live in a world of millimeters. I live in a world of like refine, like get it down to like that essence that like you're totally happy with. Do you know, like I remember my mentors when I was in the OR learning to train, and this has like come with me so throughout life. And like, you know, at the end of a case, if you don't love it, like love it through and through right now, you're never going to love it. So just like, don't walk away from the table. Don't walk away from the patient until like it's all done. And I remember like with every single product, like having that moment, like, yes, I love it. I can like put my name on this. Like, I feel like, you know, there is a moment where the self-doubt kind of like washes away when you come to that point. And, like, even though I was nerves about putting it out into the world, like, I'm proud, you know, like, even if it flops, I'm proud of what I did. I joke with my friends and family all the time. I'm like, if no one loves Epilogic 2.0, I got TrueCom for life. I got many, many units to work through.
You know, right. Like, and that has not been the case, right? Like, people love it.
I mean, I think so. The reception has been positive. We're still in the process of the relaunch. Like I said, there are eight products. 4 launched Q4 last year. We're gonna about to launch the other 4 in the next couple of weeks. Stay on the lookout. Something's happening next week. But yeah, so far the reception has been great. People are clamoring for the additional products. Like, I think if there's a question I answer, like more than any other question, it's just like, where's my daily dose? Where's my clean reveal? And I'm like, soon come, please.
Oh,
I promise.
Wow.
But so far, so far the reception has been really positive. Yeah, I mean, the numbers are where they're supposed to be. I'm a physician. I'm not going to pretend to, like, know the number. Like, how are you supposed to forecast? How fast is the growth supposed to be? I don't know. I just know people are ordering and they're saying kind things. So
I love it. That's awesome. And I think that, I don't know, I feel very sort of personally inspired by both by your, like, public journey of revision. And I think the conversation that we've had in the past about revision, just understanding that, like, you can change things and, like, that pursuit of what feels right, like the essence, like you were talking about, is worthwhile. Cause I think we sort of live in a world where it's like, get it done, get it out there, but it sort of has to stay that way forever. And so this idea that you can always be improving, always be tweaking, always be in search of the thing that is going to both fulfill your personal pride that you can put your name on and the thing that's going to fulfill your consumer, which is, like, incredible.
I mean, not to get too, like, woo-woo, but is life anything but evolution, right? It's just, that's all we're doing. We're sort of like coming, you know, refining, like, yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. I love the woo-woo. And I think that's so true, right? Like, I feel like I am in a sort of persistent state of, like, okay, so, all right. When I was growing up in my childhood home, we had this, like, picture, one of those, like, corny, like, inspirational posters. It was a butterfly. And underneath it said, the only constant in life is change. And so I read it, because it was my childhood home, I read it a million times over. But I am finally in the point of my life where I'm like, oh my gosh, I keep going through the highs and waiting for things to end. I go through the lows and I'm waiting for the highs to come back again. When am I going to realize that the peaks and valleys are just life? Like, this is it. Like, we just keep moving and keep evolving.
That's it.
All of it is life. So now I'm getting woo-woo, but
it's the ride, right? That's what it is.
Yeah,
exactly. No, I mean, that's what it is ultimately.
Yeah, I love it. That's awesome. I want to talk a little bit about plastic surgery sort of as a whole. And I know that, you know, you have sort of this personal ethos at Brooklyn Face and I of sort of highlighting the natural character while also respecting your innate architecture, which I love that phrase and that sort of personal ethos. But those two things are seemingly at odds with the way that plastic surgery is talked about and, like, proliferating in our culture right now. So how do you reconcile those two things within your practice?
I could care less about the culture of plastic surgery, I think, is my sort of, like, easy answer, right? Like, listen, this is something I grapple with on a daily basis, right? Like, I am like, am I on the wrong side of life with what I do on a daily basis? Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, is this, cause, you know, patients are getting younger and younger and I'm like, I don't feel great about that. I'll be honest with you. Like, I think like the sort of like the anti-aging sort of like mantra that we're sort of like surrounded by at all times is like exhausting to me because we're all going to age. Like, come on. Like, if that's really like all you're working towards, like, you're going to lose that battle, right? Like, hopefully you lose that battle, right? Like, hopefully we're privileged enough to get older. So the way I approach what I do is I think there are a lot of techniques out there that can sort of like play up our best features and sort of like just keep us looking and feeling our best. My goal is never to erase every line and any wrinkle. It's not a mission that I care to align myself with. I realize that like that's at odds with the industry that I sit within. Like I understand more than ever that I'm a shill for the Botox and filler companies, right? They get to people through me. And so they're marketing to my customer, they're marketing to me, and I'm just trying to keep my head on straight and push it all out. Here's how I approach things. If someone comes to me and they're like, I just look old and tired. I'm like, old, I can't help you with. Like, whatever. Like, you're going to look your age, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But tired, like, if there are like expressions on your face, like emotional states that are being expressed that you don't intend them to, I can help with that, right? If dark circles are making you look tired, I can help you look less tired. If furrows between your brows are making you look worried all the time, when actually you consider yourself like light and vibrant and, you know, like exuberant, and you don't want to give that off, I can help you with that. But I'm not going to do the, hey, let's try and make you look 10 years younger. Hey, like, I just, it's not something that I want to play into personally. So that line that you read, for me, it's about the innate architecture is like, what is your face doing, right? Like, what is your anatomy? What is your bone structure? How is your soft tissue draping? And how can I use your best features to play things up? And then, like, our faces are full of character, right? Like, if you pay attention to the Botox commercials, we should never have crow's feet, and therefore, like, our eyes should never smile. I think that's a sin. I don't want to erase, like, joy from our faces. So it's really about, like, what is your face giving off in terms of like who you are, and how can we play that up?
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I like the way that you put it, like not erasing the joy, not stripping away the character, because I think that's part of what stresses me out when I think about the normalization and proliferation of plastic surgery, is that it feels as though there is a mold that we're all trying to fit. And there is sort of this, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with the Instagram face that, her name is slipping my mind right now, but there's a whole article about it, about this idea of the Instagram face that we're all sort of moving toward, where it's this like, you know, mysteriously youthful, somehow has no race, but also could be every race, like has some black features, something pulled from every culture, that sort of like Instagram face that we're all going for. And I think that that is what troubles me, is like the standardization of it all, where it's not just that you should be getting plastic surgery, it's that you should be getting plastic surgery to look a specific way.
I will say that I feel very fortunate that I practice in Brooklyn, right? I think if anything, like you find people that are a little bit more sort of like independent, individualized, I do get more people that come in and they're like, oh my God, I love this about my face, but this is kind of bothering me. And I'm like, yes, I love that. Like, we're like leading with your best feature. Like, that makes me really happy. Thank goodness I don't get a lot of, hey, look at this person on Instagram, I want to look like her. That doesn't happen to me. Like, thank goodness. I would not still be in business. I would like pull my hair out. But yeah, I think it's sort of a shame that there is this sort of like mold that's been created, and that mold equals beauty, and how far you deviate from that mold is a problem for a lot of people. I want to say this without being a jerk. I went to school for a very, very, very long time, right? Like, I went to school, my training was kind of insane. And if I am going to have gone through all that and then day to day just turn people into clones of some random mold that like culture has decided is beautiful, that's like a waste of the training I went through, those hours, the studying, the mentorship, a waste of a life lived for me in terms of like satisfaction. Like, I refuse to participate.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely. And it sounds like that seems to be your mindset overall, is like there's a larger culture around plastic surgery, and then there's what you do within your practice. And I imagine this is a great time to have your own practice where you can sort of do like have your own world of what your personal ethos looks like. But at the same time, you know, you don't exist in a vacuum. So there's all of these other influences.
At the end of the day, I just have to like come home and not feel like a jerk, not feel like I'm taking some person who's kind of going through some mental crisis, some emotional crises, money, and played on their vulnerabilities. People are coming to me and they're like trusting me with their faces. And I like take great responsibility for that. And at the end of the day, I just want to like not feel like a jerk, not feel like I sort of was predatory or I want to be an ally. Like I want to help. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is. It's troubling in a lot of ways to see what's happening outside of your practice, but it's also really great to know that there are sort of like doctors like you who are really trying to reconcile all of these different things and create an outcome that is best for both the person getting the surgery and their mental health. And just like, it's always a holistic approach, it seems like.
I try.
I want to hear a little bit more about your personal beauty rituals, because like you said, you've got a lot on your plate, two businesses at this point. What does unwinding, relaxing, like your personal beauty rituals, what do those look like?
Yeah, I would say that, like, not surprisingly, at home, I'm all skin. Like, I just, like, I enjoy all the products. Like, I take the routines pretty seriously. I'm not, like, a 10-step girl, but, like, I'm religious about, like, a really solid AM and PM routine. I'm hopeless with cosmetic, right? So, for me, it's all about, like, I take a lot of, like, joy and pride in taking care of my skin. In terms of just like wellness and beauty, I am a fitness fanatic.
Ooh. Okay. What do you like to do?
I powerlift. So that's like a joy for me. I've recently become obsessed with reformer Pilates. Like, I just love, again, this is going to sound very plastic surgeon of me.
I love reformer Pilates. Right?
I love the degree of precision and how much it's like a mental mindfulness practice as much as it is like a physical one. Oh my gosh. Like, that's, it just gets me. There's a lot of joy there for me.
Yes. I love the running themes across every aspect of your life. It's like, this totally tracks. It's all on brand.
I mean, I am predictable in a lot of ways. I will never forget, there was one day that I was in the office and, like, you know, I'll go into the waiting room and if something looks a little askew, I will, like, you know, just go and like change the angles, make sure the light is hitting on the right things at the right angles. And a staff member that's been with me for like ages was onboarding a new staff member. And I didn't see what question was asked or what the interaction started with. But then I heard like the experienced staff member going, "Oh, no, just let her do it. She has to come and like futz with the things." So yes, that's kind of like who I am. Like, I kind of like the nuance of getting in there, like that little bit of like precision. But yeah, I'm pretty predictable in that way.
Too funny. I also love reformer Pilates, but it is not necessarily in my nature by any means or measure, but I've found it to be, like you said, the best combination of mindfulness and just like, honestly, intense exercise. Like, it gets a little painful, unexpectedly so. I think I was very much one of those people who, when I first tried it out, was like, oh, this is like soccer mom territory. Like, moms do Pilates. And then I got in there and I was like, holy shit, these moms are fit. Oh my gosh. Yeah. This is insane. Yeah. I would have never guessed powerlifting though.
Yeah, I love it. It's so fun. It's so scary, but it's so fun. I have a coach who I think is brilliant and I trust him implicitly. Like, he's never going to prescribe more than I can actually do. And, you know, he's got eyes on me to make sure that everything I'm doing is really safe. You know, that every class starts with, like, you know, he'll write everyone's name down on the board and write down numbers. And there's always this feeling of like, oh, I can't do that. What? I can't do that. And then inevitably you do it and you get to write it down and, you know, you get to actually like track your progress. I get to see where I was like a year ago at this time. And I'm like, whoa, you know? So, I do love that it like sort of like forces me to like not be the like timid person that I can sometimes be in life. It's like a moment of sort of like owning something that I would think would be out of my reach. So yeah, I think it's a good practice for me in a lot of ways.
I love it. One of my best friends just got into, well, she's been into like Olympic powerlifting for the past year or so. I think it's like where you do like the three lifts. I don't know all the details, but she sends me videos of her crushing squats. And I'm like, holy, like, this is incredible.
Pretty badass. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I love it. So when it comes to this like skincare routine, are you all Epilogic or are there other brands that you're loving right now?
I am a very curious person. So other things come out and I'm like, I must try this. I always go back to Epilogic. I realize that's like a very sort of like, I don't know, boring answer, a very predictable answer. I'm not going to say that like other products aren't great, but there's also to the point of like, I know the sauce. Do you know? Like I know how much I poured into every product. I remember getting the pushback from the formulators. Like, you can't make a product with this many actives. Like, it's going to cost you too much. And I'm like, just pour it in there. I'll worry about it later on. It's my problem to like run my business. It's your problem to make the product for me, you know? So I do sort of like, I just appreciate knowing the degree of treatment that I'm getting in every step as intimately as I do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. And I don't think it's a boring answer at all. I think anytime we interview founders, I always wonder how far they stray from their own products. But at the end of the day, if I had made a skincare line, I would use my own stuff too, right?
Like, yeah,
it's what you know, it's what you poured your life into. Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's what you iterated until you thought it was perfect. Like, literally, I had one lab say to me, they were like, if you don't love this submission, go elsewhere. Like, we refuse to revise this for you further. We refuse to refine this for you further. And I was like, no problem. I'm going. Like, you're not committed to excellence, so you're obviously not the right partner for me. Do you know? Like, I don't understand that as an answer. And I get it. They're a business. They have their own issues. But I was just like, if I'm not happy, you're not going to get me to sign and say this is great when I know it's not great. Like, bye-bye.
Right. How do you sort of like garner the strength in your own vision to be able to take that kind of feedback and sort of like immediately just remove it from your mind? To be able to just take it and be like, all right, well, this is not the right partner and not, I don't know. I feel like sometimes for me, there's like self-doubt that comes into my vision rather than thinking, oh, this partner is not the right partner.
You're talking to her a year after this happened. As soon as that phone call happens, I'm pacing back and forth. What do you mean you're hearing? You know, like, oh, in the moment, it's just like, they know I don't, right? It's the self-doubt. They must know better. What are they picking up on that I'm not? I don't think this is amazing. I wanted to have X, Y, Z, and it's not doing it. But at the end of the day, my mentor, Dr. De La Roca, if you don't love it on the table, don't walk away, because magic is not going to happen and you're not going to love it later, right? Like, just deal with it then.
So we have a little beauty speed round that we like to end with for all of our guests. So whenever you're ready, I'm going to just throw some questions at you and you just give me your first answer, the first things that come to mind.
All right, let's go. I'm excited.
Awesome. Okay, here we go. The beauty product I use every day is?
Masterplan. It's my serum. It's a growth factor serum.
I love it.
It's kind of insane.
And that Masterplan, the before and afters are like so good. Like, just everyone looks so bright and beautiful. I'm obsessed. The last beauty product I bought was?
What's the last beauty product I bought? Oh, shoot. What did I buy? I bought a new sunscreen. I bought the Beauty of Joseon sunscreen, and it is delicious.
I haven't heard
so
of
good.
It.
It's
is
so
it
good.
Mineral,
the texture is
chemical?
Beautiful. It's a chemical, but of course it's like Korean brand. So it's a better chemical than sort of like our US FDA approved chemicals. The texture is gorgeous. Gorgeous.
Oh my goodness.
It's a beautiful finishing step.
Okay. My beauty crush is, and this can be anyone whose like beauty looks you admire.
I've got to say, Brooke Devard kills it. I like, and it's more than just like how she looks. I'm like, girl, how are you doing it all? Like, you got a full-time job.
Yeah.
You got the podcast. You got the gorgeous family and you're serving the looks. I just need to sit down. Like, I'm tired. It's not just the physical. It's just like you give off such like power, grace, like intelligence, embodiment. Like she's in it. And like, you know, I know you shouldn't trust everything you see on Instagram, but like I've met her and she is that person. Like she's not faking the funk. Like it's just, it's authentic. Yeah. So I've got to say, it's more than just like a two-dimensional thing. It's who she is and how that comes through in her beauty.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. She and I, when she lived in New York, we went to the same salon. And so I've met her a couple times there. And it's the grace. It's the like, it's the way that she moves through the world. You are just instantly attracted to her. Like, it's all of the intangibles, right? Like, and that is what makes someone beautiful.
It's, I think, more than the physicality. It's like, yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. My favorite.
She's such a smarty pants too. Yeah.
Oh my God. I know. Yeah. Well, yeah, she does all of that, says all of that. And then she went to Stanford and you're like, wait, girl, like what? Make it make sense. My favorite song to get ready to is.
So it changes for me all the time. I'm still on Beyonce Church Girl.
It's good. I'm on, I keep cycling through and like hyper fixating on each song in the album. And right now I'm in a heated phase. I was getting off the subway yesterday, just dancing through. Everyone's like looking at me and I'm like, right, but it's heated is on. Like, I can't help it. You just can't help but move.
Yeah. Yeah. So good.
It just feels good. All right. This is our last one. I love being a Black woman because?
I mean, how do I not be a jerk with this? I mean, we sort of touched on this before, but like the world wants to be us. Like we hold such power. I'm a jerk. Sometimes like I look at my boyfriend and I'm just like, you don't just love me. You want to be me, right? Like, no, but I just think the beauty and power is unparalleled. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
This podcast was produced by B.A. Kasanga. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you like what you heard, head over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts to catch up on all episodes of The Hue Report. You can also stay connected with our growing Black beauty community by following us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at The Hue Report.